Hello, once again, this is Bruce Johansson, Professor of Biblical Studies in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. I will be your host again during this quarter for Good Word, and we are looking at the Johannine letters, and two gentlemen are here to aid me with discussion and wisdom. Dr. Dave Thomas, Chairman of the School of Theology, Professor in Systematic Theology, and a pastor of many years. Also, Dr. Pedrito Maynard Reed, Professor of Biblical Studies, Missiologist, author, and Assistant to the President for Diversity on our campus. Gentlemen, welcome again.
Thank you,
to
Bruce.
Our discussion.
It's a delight to be here again, Bruce.
John is a rich little letter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned at the beginning that it is disarmingly simple and yet extremely profound.
Mm-hmm.
He moves on to talk about love and the tests of being in the right lane, so to speak. He's once again, confidence and encouragement, I think, are uppermost as he talks to his flock. For this is the message which you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. This whole passage from 3:11 to 24, and actually we're also going to deal with 4:7 to 5:4,
mm-hmm.
two huge passages, both of them deal with love. The first one, you have a repetition, we should love one another, verse 11, okay? We should love one another, verse 18, and then once again in verse 23 near the end, love one another. Okay, we should, actually, is mentioned with that.
Oh, there is something happening there,
yep.
that there's a lack of love in the community.
There's a break in love.
And I just find that to be just a major problem in the New Testament church and in the Christian church, wherever you get into Paul's letter in the Corinthians. And there's a breakdown in the community,
oh,
and it's
yeah.
because there are tensions over a love relationship.
Yeah, in fact, chapter 13 is part of the argument.
That's why he centers that.
Centers it, the whole thing of spiritual gifts.
You could do all of that and you don't have love. And I find that at the heart of the problem here is this lack.
He actually goes, we've seen him, you know, talk about a person who hates his brother cannot love God. He plays off love and hate before. He pushes it even further here. That love actually, hate leads to murder. And he brings Cain in.
Now, Bruce, I'd like to hear you two textual scholars talk about hate.
Hmm.
Well, what is hate? What is your understanding of hate?
Yeah,
what does the word hate mean?
Mizeo.
Is it an intense word? Is it a strong word? Is it a...
It's a very strong word, I think. And actually, Jesus brings that up in Matthew, doesn't he, in the Sermon on the Mount.
That's exactly right.
I haven't come to change the law unless your righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees. Kingdom of Heaven will elude you.
And he gets into these antitheses.
And then
you know.
He sharpens the law. He makes it harder.
That's what he does. Jesus is more conservative than the conservatives, Pharisees.
I think this passage is actually, it's got that. It's got Jesus teaching.
Oh, this is exactly there. You know, you get into Matthew 5 there. He says, you have heard it. He gives five antitheses.
5:21 to 23.
5:21, and he says, you have heard it was said. You know, but I said, you know, don't murder. Don't kill.
The reason I raise that is the question about hate is that the word hate to me today seems to have been very much watered down. If you disagree with somebody...
Oh, we water down love too, don't we?
Well, yeah. But hate, you know, especially if it's linked here with the prospect of murder, is talking about a very intense attitude, not just a disagreement of some kind.
Yes. Yeah. And we play those games with words. Don't we? You hear somebody, I hate that. Or we like hyperbola. But we have also watered down love.
But I'm saying that the word he used there is of the intense variety, right?
Yeah, the kind that leads to murder.
Yeah, yeah.
But you get to that, here he used it again here in Jesus, in Matthew, the last of the antitheses. It's very interesting. Again, I talked earlier about what comes first and what comes last.
Mm-hmm.
They're intentional writers and speakers in Bible times in Eastern societies. And the first one in verse 21 of chapter 5 is, if you have said, you shall not murder, but I say if you're angry.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost an anger of hate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is verse 43. You have heard what it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.
That's right.
And this morning in for devotional, we read from Psalms 139, where the psalmist says, I hate my enemies. I hate them with perfect hatred.
Yes.
You know? You know. Yeah. But Jesus says, yes. That's how people saw it in those days, like in the days of sacrifices and all of that. But now I say to you, love your enemies. Pray for those that persecute you.
Yeah.
Instead of hate. Now, this is not disagreement. You know, this is not just having a... Because Jesus disagreed with people, still loved them, disagreed with lots of stuff. But this is... The way we're not going to have this hatred. Instead, replace it with love, with fellowship. I know of a lot of people who are going to heaven that just hate certain people. They're good Christians. They believe in the Bible. They believe in the doctrines.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate that. And you know, and not just eight individuals. They hate countries. They hate, I mean, Jesus would love Hitler.
They hate other races.
They hate other races.
Yes.
They hate other classes of people. And there is hatred that burns up people's heart. It makes it dark. And they can't even study the Word of God and have a relationship because of what hatred has done for them. And Jesus and John and Paul all try to say, you cannot love God and hate. And be a Christian. It's like murder. And that's serious.
It's serious business. You know, I think a lot of hatred is driven by fear.
Oh, I think most of it is.
Most of it is.
It's driven by fear and the prospect of loss.
Yes. And it's not without... It's not an accident that in the passage we're looking at now, he talks about murderous hate. And when you come to the other passage of... 4:7, all the way down actually to 5:4, where love goes constantly through all the thing, is that perfect love casts out all fear.
How do you get rid of fear?
Yeah.
And you talk about fellowship. One of the projects I do for my class, or a number of my classes, is say, for example, I call them incarnational projects. Where you go and incarnate yourself, say, with a person or a family of another race. Get to know them. And by knowing them, helping them, learning from them, fellowshipping with them, you have broken down fear because you have shown love.
That's right.
The fear will never go if you keep them apart, which John is talking about.
Yes.
That
fellowship. Breaks it down.
Breaks it down, you see.
I think fear of the unknown is one of the most irrational and one of the most powerful fears people have. They're afraid because of what they don't know.
And you can't love.
And fear of loss.
But see, hate I think is a very, very powerful and very dangerous emotion. People who hate don't realize that oftentimes the people they hate don't have any idea about their hatred, and so their hatred is only consuming themselves. It's not affecting the people they hate.
I have a student that when I just came here first, in January 1990, she just hated me. Never met me before. I just arrived on campus. In my class, she just hated me.
I think it was the beard, Pedrino.
It wasn't a beard. The sage-like beard. You know, and I had to work at that. It took a few years. Finally, when she got to know me, we were best good friends, you know, because there's just a fear. It's irrational in many instances.
I think one of the recent TV programs that has really fascinated is people from the United States who went to Africa and families who went to live. One family in the United States went to live with a Maasai family.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing what happens, what that sets off, the kinds of bonds and things.
Oh, it's amazing. It's wonderful.
So... love is the antidote. And I think if you boil love down to feelings, it's not very helpful.
No.
It's not very helpful. It has to be a principle. Feelings can follow, but it has to be. I can love people that I dislike. I never realized that before. I can actually love people who I dislike.
In a sense, I agree with you. Because I think you can act in their best interest, and you can
precisely
you can not do them harm, and you can
and feeling will come.
Yeah, yeah.
in my opinion. But initially, I have a very hard time with that.
I disagree. In a sense, I think we can have different stages of love, right? There, and what we do is trying to grow in love. My love will never be as perfect as God's love.
No.
But as I love, I'm going to be growing in trying to get rid of whatever I call dislike. The word dislike is not a biblical term. Like is not a biblical term.
No, it
isn't. You know, God calls us to love. Well, maybe we shouldn't get into a big debate of like and dislike. But
Well, from my experience, I had to start with love because like was not there, but it developed.
and maybe it's a Western rational thing that it's the more Eastern Oriental type mind, African mind, we can't make that great distinction between the cognitive and the emotive. They are closely linked. See?
I hear you.
So that may be cultural.
So then, how do we convince ourselves besides those strident things? Well, you know, if we love, then we know we're on the right side, and if you hate, you better think. Again, right? But these people are struggling, and he says, we should not love in word or speech, but in deed and in truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on at the end of that passage. In the middle, he talks about our hearts. Let's talk about, by this we shall know that we are of the truth. This is a test that he gives, a test, okay? And reassure our hearts before him, whenever our hearts condemn us. We have to reassure our hearts when they condemn us. What happened to conscience? Isn't that something the same? And then he goes on to say, for God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything. Beloved, if our hearts do not condemn us, we have confidence before God.
Mm. Conscience is a good pillow, huh?
But you see, let me just jump back.
It sounds a little bit self-contradictory there, doesn't it? Yeah.
But I can jump back to verse 18 again. Okay. We should not love in word and speech, but in deed and truth.
Yes.
That's the halakha. That's the we need to. Yes, you can say it. You can cognitively think about it, but we need to work towards making it real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I'm saying too is that deeds are important.
That to get to that
for deed. Our own health,
yes,
and self-respect,
that's exactly right,
and identity,
and also for cementing belief.
Absolutely, it is the cement of belief, isn't it? I think that's what he's talking about.
When your belief gets to the point where it produces action, you can say your belief has substance.
And in fact, the commandment he talks about is believing in the name of the Lord Jesus and loving.
So wait, verse 23, verse 23. That commandment is not just 10 commandments.
No. It's belief in Jesus and love for one.
That's why you notice the New Testament hardly ever lists the Ten Commandments.
That's right.
Because it goes more than just a list of things.
It wants the deep foundation underneath. Gentlemen, thank you for this discussion. And once again, thanks to Michael White, our program engineer, for Good Word. This is Bruce Johansson. For more information about Good Word, you can visit the Positive Life Radio website at plr.org. Look under Programs for Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.